Validas Tour and Library Qualification Podcast with your host, Oskar Slotosz.
Hello, my name is Oskar Slotosz, and I'm your expert in tool qualification and avoidance of tool qualification.
And my name is Federica Mura, and I am your friendly representative of the audience. In this podcast, we support you in building a safe infrastructure for your software development. It's about safety of tools and libraries that you can achieve by qualification.
And today's topic is about tool qualification in IEC 61548.
Ah, very nice. And I guess I already heard about it, because you once defined it as the mother of all the standards, right?
Yes, so IEC 61548 is a very famous and the main, I would say, safety standard. And why is it the main safety standard? Because it's a safety standard that is more or less applicable to every safety relevant things, except if there is a domain specific standard. So for example, in the automotive industry, there is the ISO 26262, which is a safety standard specially targeting towards automotive industry. In avionics industry, there is DO 178B and C, special standards for avionic industry. But some industries, and for example, robotics or others, they don't have. Medicine, of course, has their own standards, but robotics don't have an own domain-specific standard right now. And therefore, well, IEC 61548 is the mother of all safety standards. If you don't have a specific one, you just go for that. And that's why I call it the mother of all safety standards.
Okay, so in case in your specific domain there is not a standard, then you can use IEC 61508. But what about the opposite situation? If you have a standard specific to your domain, can you choose any way to comply with IEC 61508?
Well, in principle, there's not so much big difference. Usually people prefer to use their own domain-specific standard because they are more concrete in their domain, more tailored. So it's a bit more generic, the IEC 61548, and therefore people prefer to have the domain-specific ones. So for example, maybe some 20 years ago, where there has not been an automotive-specific safety standard, but there were some safety relevant functions in the automotive industry, so then they had to apply IEC 61548, and then they looked to it and said, well, that's so unclear, that's so vague, let's do a domain specific standard for automotive domain. And some years later, in 2011, the ISO 26262 appeared. So that was somehow the process. They didn't have one, and then they decided, well, okay, let's create one. That's better than doing this thing. So it's more concrete, it's more unique for all the people working on it.
How would you summarize the basic principles of this safety standard?
Well, of course, it's about safety, and it's about safety integrity. So safety means how many failures you have, how many lives you might lose, how many rates you have. So that's something you can measure. And safety integrity is somehow which process are you following, what are you doing to avoid and to reduce the risk to a reasonable amount. But I think the main principle behind the safety standard and IEC 61548 and others are all in the same philosophy is, okay, if something bad happens, really an airplane crashes. So this is something that people first need to be able to analyze, why could this happen? And then of course they need to improve things that that those people that have died with such crashes or incidents, that they haven't died without purpose, so that at least the world get improved, it's learning from those incidents. And I think that's a basic principle and the philosophy behind. So if I die due to a machine or a car or whatever, then at least my family will hope that this wasn't in vain, that this has some benefits for the whole world, and nobody else should die because of the same reason. And I think that's a basic principle. So if something happens, you get scared and say, oh, this could also happen to me, and oh, then people are really worrying. But if the safety standard can ensure, and the industry itself, the whole industry says, well, we learn from that and this will never happen because we have some measures in place. And I think that's very important to the acceptable risk for people. So nobody would use an elevator if they could crash. And if one really crashes and then they find the reason and then they improve it and no other one will crash, so then it's getting very rare that those things happen.
So basically you're saying that the role of the safety standards is also to ensure that we document our own mistakes so that in the future we can learn from them.
Yeah, well, you can analyze the reason, the mistake. You need to understand it. So, for example, when you look to a recent crash that happened in Texas, where a car crashed into a tree and two people died, and then the question is, why could it happen? You need to analyze it. Was the autopilot enabled? Did they have some self-driving features inside? And you need to understand what happened really. So this is the first thing. And well, you might know that in an airplane, there is something like a black box that is recording everything in order to have it analyzable when really something like that happens. And for cars, it's there's no black box required. Right now, but it needs to be analyzable. So that's one thing. So you need to understand what really happened. So, for example, I recently learned that Challenger, which the rocket which exploded some 30 years ago or whatever, that they found the reason why it happened. So it's interesting to know this. So to find it out and then be able to correct it. And of course, when you look, for example, to software and there is a failure in the software, it's not hard. It's not easy to find this out. So you need to have a documentation. You need to have test cases that are documented. So once you have a documented test case and your documented description of the software, then you can find out, okay, the software wasn't aware of this in the situation. We didn't test for it. Therefore, it could happen. But what then is quite easy to say, okay, now we are aware of the situation, we create additional test cases and the new software and all future softwares, they will be aware of this and then it's sure that this will never happen again. So, and this is a bit the philosophy behind the standards. Many people complain, oh, the safety standards, so much documentation, why do I need to do all these things and it's so much of a work. Yeah, well, but you do it in order to document that your system is safe and it can be analyzed and document what you did. And also when you document what you did, then you can't be attacked so easy. So, for example, there was in China, it's quite recent, quite a public case where a woman pretends that her father was killed due to a fault of a car. She pretends it, and the car manufacturer says, well, we don't know any issues that could have caused this, but the car was accelerating and crashing into another car, and her father died. So how can the car provider prove that maybe the father had really pressed the accelerator and maybe he was a heart attack or whatever and pressed the accelerator and then and died in the car. So, and if the car provider cannot prove this, then it's always a long lawsuit and there's protests here and bad stories around it. So that's if you can prove that, if you have a good documentation, then you can also prove that it wasn't your fault. And if it was your fault, then of course you can learn of it. So I think that are the two situations. So you need to look to the case, what is if something happens, and then you see the real value of the safety standards.
Could you give us an overview about the general structure of IEC 61508?
Well, IEC stands for International Electrotechnical Commission. And this is in the French-speaking part of Switzerland. So, and therefore they produce the standards in their mother language, which is French, and of course in English. Well, most standards have several parts, such that you can just decide, okay, we go only for the software part, which is the part 3, and then you don't need to buy the whole standard, but only part three. And IEC 61508 has seven parts, and well, we focus only on the third part, which is about the software, the safety relevant software. And like the most safety standards, they do have different process phases. So from the requirements, architecture and design, implementation modules, whatever. So that's a typical development process, and that's why that comes from the integrity phase. So the idea behind this, when you want to make software safe, then you have to make the software development process safe, and therefore they are quite a process, many requirements on the process how to develop the software. From our point of view, we are looking to the tool and library qualification parts, and those are of course in part three of IEC 61508. And well, for the libraries, there is a chapter which is called Root 3S. So there are three ways to make a library safe, and I think one is just to develop it according to IEC 61508. And this Root 3S is the third route to make a library safe, and that's typically done for pre-existing components.
Do you know why is it called Root 3S?
Well, there are three routes, and the most famous one is the Root 3S, but for pre-existing software components, there can be Root 1S is compliant development. So if you have something that is developed according to a safety standard, then this is Root 1S. Root 2S is proven in use, so you need to provide evidence that the element is proven in use. And there are some chapters how to do this. And then there is the Root 3S. And that's something, a bit of a black box view, how you can assess non-compliant development. So if the software was already developed, you can assess it and check it. And well, that's something, a simplification. So for example, if you say something like you should define programming guidelines first and then develop according to the programming guidelines. Well, if the software has been developed already, then it's too late to do this. So therefore, for pre-existing software, you also should look the guidelines and the style, whether it's a good software or not. But for example, you cannot require MISRA compliance for MISRA 2020 if the software is 10 years old. So, well, that's something you cannot really require, and you have to have some simplifications. But Root 3S is not a big simplification, so it's just picking some of the requirements that, or most of the requirements for the software, they are also required for Root 3S.
What does IEC 61508 says about the tool qualification?
Well, that they say what all other standards also say, of course, is because it's the mother of the safety standards. They say first classify the tools and then qualify the tools.
And in terms of classification and qualification, are there some differences with other standards, as for instance ISO 26262?
Yeah, the classification is different from ISO 26262. So in ISO 26262, we have learned that there is a tool confidence level that is computed from the tool impact and from the tool detection probability. So how the error can be detected of the tools. And this was quite a complex process because you need to think about all the use cases of the tool and all the potential errors and all the detection mechanisms and so on. So this was quite a complicated process. And in the I6501, that's much simpler.
Simpler in which sense?
Yes, they have a different. They don't have a tool confidence level, but they do have tool classes. And they have tool classes T1, T2, and T3. So that's much simpler, and because a T1 is just a textual tool or some helper tools or something like that, which are not really contributing to necessary thing, important things. T2 tools are verification tools, and T3 tools are constructive tools. So, for example, a compiler is a constructive tool because it contributes to the executable. Then it's T3. And a code generator is also a constructive tool because it contributes to the product. And Verification tools are code coverage tools, review tools, testing tools. Those are verification tools.
And constructive and verification tools both need to be qualified?
Yeah, there are some things that need to be done for both classes. So T1 is nothing to be done. And interestingly, they said, for example, a requirements management tool is T1. And there are many people that are using requirements tools that disagree with that. Because if you lose a requirement, then if you lose a safety requirement, then the safety is lost. So this is a critical thing. And you could argue that's like a constructive thing. So you enter the requirements in the safety requirements in the requirements tool. And if you lose them, they won't go to the product. And if you have them, then they will go to the product. So there you can also argue that's a constructive tool. But obviously IEC 6541 people said, well, requirements tools are T1 tools, which many people disagree when they do their risk analysis. Yeah, but for the tool classes of T2 and T3, of course, you need to have a specification and you have to have some usage constraints, what you may do and what you may not do. And also you need to determine an assessment shall be carried out for offline tools in the classes T2 and T3 to determine the level of reliance placed on the tools. So you need to and the potential failure mechanisms of the tool that may affect the executable software. So you should do something similar like the ISO 26262 does. But that's part of the qualification or an insurance. So the classification is done very simple. It's a constructive or it's a verification tool. And if it's constructive or verification, then you need to do this risk analysis. And then it says, you should, for the T3 tools, you should do the validation, meaning the testing. And, they said it's not done exactly like this. They said, okay, you should have evidence that the tool conforms to its specification. So, if it's just a one-line script that you call a tool, then you can give the evidence and saying, okay, I did a review. But if it's more complex, then I think the evidence is better done by testing. So T3 tools need to be qualified using a Qkit. At least that is what we are doing at Validus. And of course, you can try to give the evidence other way.
And at Validus, how do we deal with IEC 61508 and how it is sometimes maybe intertwined with the ISO 26262?
Well, in principle, we do have qualification kits that support both standards. And, the classification is in ISO 26262 a bit more complex. So you need to define this tool confidence level. While it's simpler in the IEC 61508, because you have only the classes T1, T2, T3. And those you can, as we say in Germany, do it on a single sheet of paper. So this is really easy to determine those classes. What is the next step is in IEC 61508, you do need to have this impact analysis. And that's something that we can do with a tool chain models that we have in our Qkits. And when ISO 26262, that's part of the classification, but here it's part of the qualification. But an interesting aspect is the comparison of the results. So you have three classes, T1, T2, T3, TCL1, TCL2, TCL3. But for example, if you have a code generator, then it's obviously a class T3 because it's a constructive tool that generates something. Well, but in ISO 26262, a code generator can have TCL3 if you don't check the results. But if you treat the generated code like manual written one, then the code, and you have then have a high detection probability because you test the generated code intensively with code coverage and so on. So then you have a high detection probability for all errors that the code was generated wrongly. And then the code generator is not TCL3, but TCL1. And you don't need to qualify. And that's a big difference between IEC 61448, where you say a code generator is a constructive tool that needs to be is T3, and needs to be validated, And in ISO 26262, it can be TCL1 as well. And then the, but it's of course it's safe because if you have a high detection probability, if you detect or if you test all the generated code like manual written one, then you it doesn't make sense to qualify the code generator. But people IEC 61508 were not happy with the situation that ISO 26262 had such a clever way of reducing the criticality of a code generator, because that was is a good and clever idea. But then in the second edition of IEC 61508, they made an interesting requirement, and that's so interesting that I'm going to read it for you.
Yeah, please.
So it, one thing it says, okay, you should do a validation, whatever, whatever. But then it's a requirement in the part 3.7.4.4.8. And it literally says, where the conformance evidence of validation is unavailable, there shall be effective measures to control failures of the executable safety-related system that result from faults that are attributable to the tool. So let me translate this. This means, if you cannot validate your tool, it's also okay to perform an effective mitigation strategy. So you have to have effective measures for all potential errors. And that is the same thing as TCL1 argumentation. So if you have a code generator, you generate code and you do the test, the generated code like manual written one, this is effective and has a high probability. And then it's the same thing. So you can then use it without testing or without validation. And that's more or less, they do the same thing as ISO 26262, but maybe as not as part of the classification, but later on as a different qualification method. So in principle, the safety standards here are equivalent, and that's why our model and our QKIT support them both.
Actually, I was wondering, in practice, how is IC61508 integrated within the toolchain analyzer?
Well, in our TCA, we have a model that can determine the tool confidence level based on the potential errors and the detection probabilities. So we have a model of potential error and we have a model of detection, either a check or a restriction, and with a probability. And we do this for all the tools, and we do not differentiate between a constructive tool and a verification tool or another tool. So ISO 26262 says you should do it for all tools, and we do it for all tools. But the question whether a tool is T1, T2, or T3 depends on the kind of the tool or on the supported method. Is it a constructive method or is it a verification method? Those are the most critical ones. And well, since TCA does not differentiate between them, we added a way to differentiate this. So we could have done the classification manually, but we didn't want to do some manual activities in TCA. So therefore we said, okay, we introduce something like the methods that are supported from the tool. For example, CTC is a code coverage tool, and in the IEC 61408, and there is a method which is called code coverage measurement, and or there's a method called unit testing, and those are two methods that are listed in the safety standard, and we can type them in as methods in the TCA, and we can then classify the methods as being verification methods. And this classification we can just assign to the tool and say, okay, by assigning the tool, we somehow model that the tool supports this method. And then it's obviously, if for example, if a tool supports code generation and verification, so like the IBM Jest tool suite, they have parts that support code generation and support verifications. And we can assign this tool to this method and to this method. So then there are multiple methods assigned. And of course, the most critical counts, and then it comes to T3 because it's constructive parts. And so the TCA somehow infers the classification from the method assignment, which is not a big deal, because if you assign it a constructive method, it will be T3. If you assign it a verification method, it will be T2. But if you assign it no method, it will be T1. So therefore, if you model something for ISO 26262, you do not need to model these methods. But if you go to IEC 61548, you need to, in addition, model those methods. So typically, you take a look into the safety standard, pick some methods, and enter them into TCA and assign them to the tool, and you are done. So that's not a big work, but it needs to be done in order to infer those T1, T2, T3 classes. Okay, that's it for today. Let's wrap it up. So we have seen the tool classification in IEC 61548, and it has the classes T1, T2, T3, and there are ways to qualify the tool by validation, and there is also the effective mitigation strategy that is an alternative to the validation, which is comparable to the ISO 26262 safety manual and safety strategy with tool confidence level 1. Okay, thank you for today, and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening. And if you like to contact us, our email address is podcast@validas.de.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening. And don't worry about qualification. Be happy with Validas.